Good evening, and welcome to another episode of Nigeria Politics Weekly. As usual, my name is Michael, and co-hosting with me is Phoenix. Today we have two guests. Our first guest is Dele. Dele is a trader and member of the Labour Party of Nigeria. Our second guest is Dr. Aminu. Dr. Aminu is a university lecturer and member of the People's Democratic Party, the PDP. Today, we'll be discussing three topics. First of all, we'll discuss the accidental bombing of a city or a town in Kaduna State by the Nigerian military. Secondly, we'll discuss the announcement by Asue Ighodalo, one of the prominent lawyers in Nigeria, that he's interested in running for the governorship of Edo State. And finally, we'll discuss the announcement by the President of Benin Republic that Nigeria has opened its borders to the 43 banned goods that Buhari had shut the border to. So, to our first topic, Phoenix, the accidental bombing that has taken place in the north, can you talk us through what's happening? Why has this suddenly become a front burner issue? Is this the first time this has happened? And how did it happen, Phoenix?
Hi, Michael. Hi, listeners, and thanks, Aminu and Dili, for joining us this week. Michael, if you remember, last week you asked a question around what it means to be or what a climate bat is, and it seems like our listeners were. We're very happy to give you a definition. So I think it might be one that you should look to. It's at least I've seen one definition. It's quite interesting. It's always good to get listener feedback.
Thank you, listeners, for the answer.
to your question, well, we were told that this was an accidental thing, but I mean, as far as I'm concerned, this is one too many. This is not new. We've seen quite a lot of these kinds of incidents. We saw quite a lot of it while Buhari was in power. Notably, RAN, if I remember correctly. There were a few others that don't immediately jump to mind, but this I think, had a lot more casualties in one particular incident. And to your point, I mean, this should always be front burner, right? I mean, no matter what happens, our people should not be falling to friendly fire. We should have a competent military that should be able to, seek out, targets that are harming the nation and stopping our security from being at the level we'd like it to do, without, making our own people casualties of this incident. Now, so for me, it should always be front burner. But I think what we are also seeing is the nature of politics, coming to the fore. We're seeing this, lifted to a very visible level more than we saw in the past. We did not see as much from the political class in responding to such incidents in the past. It was always Nigerians, especially on social media, who would make the noise, who would call out the government, especially as we never saw government, take action or show remorse or make sure that such things were investigated and the right remediation actions were taken so that it doesn't repeat itself. This time around, again, we're seeing the government not paying as much attention. I don't recall seeing a, and I might be wrong, I don't recall seeing a message from the president on this particular issue. But then we've seen members of the political class rise up and, call out this issue. And just today I saw that They said all 109 senators had decided to donate their salaries. I just saw the news. I don't know if it's true or not. Had decided to donate their 1 month salary to the victims, which again, of course, I mean, Nigerians have said, look, there have been many of these incidents. We never saw this happen. There have been incidents across all of Nigeria. We've never seen this happen. What is driving this? So I think that's really the crux of the matter. It should be a front burner issue whenever something like this happened. We should be calling out the government and the security forces to ask them to do better, to make sure that, to first of all investigate and make sure that it was truly accidental, and if it's not, I mean, some people need to be brought to book, and make sure that the right things are done so that it doesn't happen again. But the political undertones that we see are quite interesting.
Thank you, Phoenix. Dr. Aminu, you've heard what Phoenix has said, and a number of people on social media have highlighted the fact that, for example, the Sultan of Sokoto is vocal about the issue. Northern lawyers are threatening to sue the federal government. Former Governor Nasir El-Rufai of Kaduna has appeared on the scene and is paying condolence visits to the villagers. Even though it has been alleged that for years, whilst he was governor, when these things happened, he was nowhere to be seen. The former emir of Kano, Lamido Sanusi, too, has appeared on the scene. So a number of people have alluded to the fact that this could be politics at play. What do you think, Dr. Amido?
Thank you, Phoenix, and thank you, Mike, and thank you, the other guests. What I see, I mean, we can't deny this is politics. Let's look at it. It has happened in there has been 16 military jet or drone errors, as they call it, in seven states over 9 years. And if I take you back in the first instance, it was under Goodluck Jonathan. There was one bombing in 20 March 2014. It killed 10 people somewhere in Borno. I bet you can all remember, or you can still hear the sound of shouting, the opposition were doing, at that period. This was including Sanusi Lamido and Nasir El-Rufai and all the other people. It is similar to what is happening now. Two jet attacks, I mean, one attack has happened, actually two. One in Niger in August killed one person, and this one that killed 120 people. And you can hear the sound, as loud as anything. Of course, 101 senators are donating their salaries, which is we can't deny that maybe they should be doing it, into and just be doing it for everybody. But let's go back and look at it, under Buhari, there were 13 jet or drone attacks. Deaf silence, from this stage clowns, sorry to use that word, but people like Sanusi Lamido and El-Rufai, you don't hear from them, and all they tell you is, those kind of things happen. They will give you an example, they will bring America as an example or things like that. But how do we even know America was doing it? It's because they are called for accountability. And for us here, what we are hearing is one senator from Katsina State, I don't even want to call his name for certain reasons, was saying, let's forget about that. The NSA himself, was saying, let's forget about that. I can't comprehend the situation. And me, I'm putting on my PDP hat now. When I say PDP, I mean a full-blown opposition. I don't think we should let this die down, because we have to call out their high level of incompetence. And if we let these people continue to go and feel it is okay, you know, to continue to just let Nigeria go on like that, you know, then we will be in for a big, big ride. We must call out each and every one of their atrocities and their incompetence. And I believe we should, when things like this happen, we should call for the resignation of so many people, you know. Otherwise, and of course, proper accountability, and let's know who is going to take responsibility. Otherwise, you know, we've seen what happened with the Supreme Court. Even though I respect what they did, you know, I don't agree with it. But this is just an extension. I know divisive politics is gone, you know, but we are still doing politics, and politics must continue, and we must continue to politicize this to make sure that it is well, I mean, it remains. Otherwise, these people will continue to play with Nigerian people's lives. And this is the only thing that can unseat this government. When I say this government, I mean APC. As long as we do not find the, I mean, we do not capitalize on their incompetence and their lack of taking responsibility, I don't think we are going to take them out of power. So, people like El-Rufai are there to milk this thing, and we should not give them the playing ground to milk it. It is not in their place. We have to remind them that they are part of the problem, and they should have no stage, or people like Senuzi Lamido, they should have no stage to do that. But of course, there are some, you know, clerics, you know, that I respected, who was talking about it. Why is it only happening in the north? And why do I respect that man? Buhari locked him up. He was highly criticizing Buhari from the north. I don't remember his name now. But he was highly, highly political, you know, similar to the other cleric that Buhari kicked out from one of the Kaduna mosques. They were all there, they went there. And I would like to see those people, you know, highlighting the errors of these people. And hopefully we can make it, we can make that loud sound that we were making in, they were making in 2014. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Aminu. Dele, as you know, the debate about the bombing seemed to go in the ethnic direction, and prominent members of the APC began to circulate images claiming that the officer in charge, because apparently it was an army officer in charge of the bombing, they claimed it was the Major General Valentine Okoro. But when you go online to check, you find that Valentine Okoro is the GOC of 2 Division, which is in Ibadan, and therefore could not have been responsible for a bombing that took place in the north. The GOC responsible for the Kaduna region is actually the GOC 1 Division, and his name is Major General Bamidele Alabi. But somehow they decided to pin the blame on a Major General Okoro. So the question, Dele, is, do you think this was a mistake, or is this a deliberate attempt to smear the Igbos? Because once that allegation was put out on social media, the bombings all of a sudden became a north and southwest versus an Igbo type of argument. So do you think this was deliberate or inadvertent, Dele?
Okay, thank you very much, my brothers. So, my opinion is that the Igbo has kind of soft targets as of today in Nigeria. You know, when I first saw the news, it was such a sad thing because I mean, people died. I mean, these are human lives. We should have sympathy for the humans first, right? Before any other thing, say, oh, this tribe or this tribe. But what I've seen is that this was incompetent at the highest level. You know, I don't want to know if it was a mistake or not, right? the governments or the people in charge have to immediately put up an investigation panel, set up a committee, because how can you tell me that a whole village was bombarded? I mean, that is gross incompetent, right? That is one. Then two, you see, politics have not truly left the atmosphere of Nigeria, especially with the just concluded election. It's still going to be here maybe for the next 2, 3 years before we go into the another cycle of election. Everything at this moment and point is being politicized, whether right or wrong, right? Because first, people have found a way that, any little thing, they are going to say, oh, who is the tribe or who is the person responsible? Where is he from or what religion? Practice. You understand? That is what is more important to people as of today. You understand? Then that is by the side. Then two, the opposition have to use this opportunity to scream the loudest, because if this was in 2014, trust me, Nigeria media would be blown up right now by the opposition, APC, right? If they were like in opposition. But I see everywhere is silent, like this is not supposed to be happening like this. The opposition have to make noise about it, because this is, it just, I mean, we have to hold the government accountable for what is happening. I mean, a whole village was bombarded. So for me, Mike, at all levels, we have to use this one as a scapegoat to hold the government accountable, because they swore to oath to protect the lives of Nigeria. So that is just my opinion on that. Thank you.
I just want to press you further on this issue, Dele, because you said that in Nigeria, as of today, the Igbo seem to be the soft target for any sort of political issue. And what do you think is the reason for this?
Okay, so I won't lie to you. The Igbos are sort of, I call them Republicans in nature, right? They have the way they think, and they have their feelings towards Nigeria, because they have been through and through with Nigeria. I mean, these people fought the Nigerian state for 3 years plus, I think they are, should I say, victim of circumstance. Because if you look at them right now, they have been over 2, 3 decades trying to be the president of Nigeria, at least to produce a president. And everything just seemed to be thrown back at them. And to be fair, most, if not everybody in Nigeria, mostly are afraid that if an Igbo man become president, will Nigeria still be stable, or will I be safe under an Igbo man presidency? So then it's just too, there's this Igbophobic or Igbophobia that's just in the air, like people spray it around. I mean, if you go to the market, people are asking you, oh, she or more Igbo, she, even in my own place where I'm from, so it's just so sad to see, but I pray Nigerians get past through it. So that is just it for me. I think they are just victim of circumstance.
Thank you, Dele. But because of time, we need to move on to the next topic. Phoenix. As you know, the Nigerian government, or in this case, the Benin Republic government, has announced that President Tinubu and the President of Benin Republic have reached an agreement to reverse the ban on 43 items that was put in place by Buhari's government, which was also an APC government. So first of all, Phoenix, can you explain to us why this news is important or why it's relevant to Nigerians?
Well, we've seen this government make certain pronouncements. Now, to be fair to them, they haven't been the one to make the pronouncements in this case, and that's why I'm being very cautious in terms of, you know, until this is verified and confirmed by the Nigerian government, I will just analyze from a perspective of, if this is true, what does it mean? Michael, it means a lot, to the extent that, you know, a lot of the things that were banned, you know, are within the food space. And anybody who's studying inflation in Nigeria would know that the key driver for inflation is food. And that's because we do not produce enough of the things that we eat, and therefore that and of course with the challenges we have with insecurity, particularly in the areas where our farmers are not able to go back to the farm, we also struggle with transportation, with bad transport infrastructure, bad storage infrastructure. All of those kind of things compound to make, and you only need to have a bad harvest, or which we've had a few in recent times, to throw you into a situation of near scarcity that leads to higher food prices. And of course, that's been a key issue for us from an inflationary perspective. So when you also have your borders closed, you can't import to make up the difference. You see a lot of hardship upon the people. So when, you know, I think it was a month ago or a few weeks ago when the new central bank governor, you know, announced that they were lifting the ban by the CBN on items from the import and export window, which means that, you know, there's no more blockage to people who want to import those items from accessing FX from the official windows. That was a step in the right direction, because you started to, you know, remove all of those controls that were not helping the Naira. In fact, we're creating more pressure on the Naira. Opening the borders will be the next logical step. I mean, when Buhari closed down the borders and all the things that he was doing, I was vehemently against that, saying this will only create pain for Nigerians. It makes no sense. And we saw how things turned out, and we see today that food inflation is almost heading towards 30%. So this, of course, the impact will not be overnight, but it will begin to undo a lot of the damage. And over time, you know, as things start normalize and people are able to trade again, and we're able to augment what we do, and, you know, all of that, we would expect that you begin to see the impact on the economy. So if this is true, it is a step in the right direction. To combat inflation in the state that we're in now, you need to allow imports. You need to, you know, remove all of these controls on the market and let there be a free flow of goods and services, and, you know, allow the economy to begin to turn around.
Thank you, Phoenix. And let me go to Dr. Aminu. Dr. Aminu, correct me if I'm wrong, but when Atiku Abubakar was running for office or running for president, he pledged to open the border and reverse Buhari's decision to ban importation of those 43 items. So is your party going to congratulate Bola Ahmed Tinubu for doing what your party said they would do?
The answer is no. First of all, PDP is not in power. And if PDP was in power, they know how to do open this border with care and some knowledge and some principles behind it, according to what our manifesto says. And this is very, very important, and that is why we find our country in a very unstable and volatile situation, because these people, when I say these people, I'm talking about APC, never follow a simple rule, or they never commit to what they ever say. They say one thing here, they go on to world stage, they say another thing, they come back to one region, they say one thing, And this is why we are completely in a volatile situation. And let me talk economics here. Opening this border the way they are doing it tells us that we have no chance to produce locally. And this is what the Buhari's APC was planning. And this is what they are also talking about, if I'm going to quote Wale Edun and he himself, Cardoso, This is what they were talking about. There's no, we have to start producing locally to produce. They speak all this beautiful, big, big grammar, but they're not practicing what they preach. Opening this, what do you call it? Opening this border, as you can see, since when Cardoso talked about it, we saw the new pressure we have on foreign exchange demands, due to the increased number of imports that we are going to have. It is also draining our foreign reserves. The market liquidity has been squeezed now. Of course, we can't deny, they kept on devaluing the naira, and this is not what PDP was going to do, And it's not devaluing the naira is not good for an import dependent economy. And let's look at some numbers here, Nigeria does not even trade with its African counterparts, as expected. Our imports, if you look at it, our 2022 imports was only 22.9% with African economies. 46% came from Asia. 41% came from Europe. 6.5% came from North America, and I think Africans are only higher than Latin America with 2.7%. So where are we? Their policies are completely flawed, and they don't even know what they are talking about. They don't know what they are doing, and you think they sound posh when they are speaking English. They know what they are doing. No, but they are taking us far backwards. These 43 items that they lifted, yes, on paper it looks good, but where are we? Look at what is happening. Let's be honest, look at the companies that are leaving Nigeria, and it is all due to this, their trial and error policies. These people are a bunch of amateurs, that we may think they are well experienced, but they are, in fact, they are even worse than amateurs. I just wish they had given this government to a bunch of 21-year-olds, maybe they would have done better, because I mean they can't do even worse than what these people are doing. It's just a continuous trial and error that they are doing. And believe me, they will come back and they'll tell you that it's because we are not, the problem is because we are not producing locally, and they are opening the border. So you don't put structures properly and you open the border and you come back down and do, it just beats my imagination. I can't comprehend big, not big, elderly people like these people who have ruled, or who have led banks and private organizations, are behaving like this, like amateurs. It's completely shameful, completely embarrassing. But this is where we are, where we find ourselves. So I don't know if I responded to your question correctly, but it's just burning me, how this thing is, how they are going about with this.
Thank you, Dr. Aminu, but I need to get clarification because I wasn't quite clear. So are you saying you don't support the opening of the border?
As they did, yes, I don't support it as they did, because there are things that they should have followed. There are things that they should have followed. Opening the border, and we are seeing more people, leaving Nigeria, businesses closing in Nigeria, making businesses in Nigeria much more difficult. We are supposed to, when you open the border, you are supposed to make Nigeria's domestic businesses compete with what is being imported, not driving them out. And this is what is driving businesses out. PZ is going out, PNG is going out. We can, if we start counting them, we will spend the whole hour here. So yes, this is not how PDP would have done it. Obviously, we will. It's like removing subsidy. If you ask Peter Obi, if you ask Atiku, they will all say, they all agree they will remove subsidy. But there's a method that they are going to follow, not this kind of madness. I'm sorry to say if you feel offended, but it's complete out of place. What these people are doing, with how they are removing the subsidy and everything. And there are some things that when you do it, coming back will, I don't even know when we will ever come back to it. I don't know when we will ever come back to it. So yes, I don't support how they are doing it. It's the method that is flawed, completely amateurish.
Thank you, Dr. Aminu. Dele, you've heard what Dr. Aminu has said. Now, according to the data, as at I think November 2023, food inflation was 31.52%. And also data produced by SBM Intelligence a few months before said Nigerians are spending over, I think, 40 to 60% of their monthly incomes on food. And a lot of this is alleged to be because the APC government shut the borders, so we couldn't import cheap rice, chicken, and other produce from Benin Republic and other countries abroad. So the question, Dele, is, do you think Dr. Aminu is right to suggest that the border closure policy should not have been reversed, or do you think it was the right thing to do, Dele?
Okay, so Dr. Aminu is very spot on, right? And so for me, it go both ways, because as of today, we are not a producing nation. We consume, and import, right? The situation in Nigeria right now is food deflation, everything is high. We have our farmer can't even go to farm because of insecurity and all that. So I think them opening the border, that is if it's true, APC is one party that I don't believe in. Those people, like my brother said, they say one thing here, they go another place and tell you another thing. I think if my party was to be in government, I will advise that we should open the border for the meantime, because we are not producing anything, right? We have, I mean, for just the May time to open the border so cheap things can come in. Because as a matter of fact, if Nigeria are buy food cheaper today, nobody is going to be complaining of hunger and stuff like that, for just for the meantime, right? Then two, let's even talk about how the border closure policy and all of that. See, I always say that APC is a try and error party. The way they do things is they do things in a way that they feel that they are ruling animal kingdom or something like that. They just do it. They do it in a way like just do it, and we wait for the people who are going to talk. That is just APC. So I think for me, if it's true they are going to open the border, because I won't see, I would advise that they should open the border for the meantime, that cheap articles should come in so that the food deflation will kind of a bit die down a little bit, you know, so that people can buy things cheaper. Because the more food stuff that are cheaper coming in, people will be able to afford to feed. Because right now, I reach out to people in Nigeria, you know, in few weeks now we'll be headed to Christmas, and there's so much tears that, oh, food, the rice is this, rice is that, you understand? So since we are not producing yet, let them open the border, but in a way that it will be effective. We don't want to hear that, oh, the border is open and there is still so much, you know, so much big English we spoke, oh, the border was supposed to, no. You understand? So that is just my take on that.
Thank you, Dele. Phoenix, you've heard the perspective that Dele and Dr. Aminu have provided. Does that align with your perspective? Or do you think, or to rephrase the question, is there any way in which Nigeria can compete with others in terms of producing rice, for example? Or do you think it's better for Nigeria to just accept that, look, we cannot produce rice better than others, so let's focus on something else and let's import rice because we can import it cheaply? Where do you stand in this debate, Phoenix?
I think at this moment in time, we have not shown the capacity to produce rice sufficiently to serve our purpose. So you have to allow, you know, because it's such a staple in Nigeria, we have to allow it to be imported. And, you know, either we grow the, we enable the capacity and the capability to do it, or we face other things that we do better than others and use that as our comparative advantage to make up for whatever shortfalls we think that we see from importing rice. Now, some of the things that Dr. Aminu has said, and I don't agree with, and I think Dele also underscored those points. This ongoing idea that we're a consumption economy, we're a importing economy, especially the thing around importation always sets me on edge, because for a country of our size, we do not import near enough. And I've said this thing till I'm blue in the face. You cannot have your imports to GDP at less than 20% and you're making noise about it. We don't import enough for us to be saying that we're an import-dependent nation. We're not. It is this kind of rhetoric that has led to the likes of Buhari shutting down borders, that has led to the detrimental effect that we have. Nigerians need to stop this nonsense and deal with economics the way it should be dealt with. Now, of course, I mean, Dr. Aminu would push back given his pedigree, but I know that he was also playing politics with some of the comments that he was making, so I'll give him a pass in that direction. But let's be clear. Undoing the economic blunders that the Buhari-led APC, and this is not giving APC a pass. I've said this, as far as I'm concerned, whereas we still have the same APC, I have not seen a departure from the current APC administration, you know, in terms of their wastefulness, the nonsense budget that we have seen. We've not seen them, you know, cut down on frivolous spending. We've not seen anything that is going to drive up revenue. So as far as I'm concerned, this is an APC continuum. And the disastrous policies that we saw over the last 8 years that led us to where we are today are still in force. Now, anything to begin to unwind those policies, first we've seen CBN begin to make attempt to unwind certain things. And I'm all for that, because at the end of the day, I want this economy to work. And it is clear what needs to be done for it to work. You know, opening the borders, ensuring that trade can happen. We are a trading nation. We need a government that manages resources prudently, that puts resources in areas that will create a multiplier effect. You sort out the infrastructure, you sort out, you know, things that security, you sort out the education, healthcare. We are an industrious people. We've always, you know, Nigerians, you know, trading, building businesses, doing things has always been, you know, the mainstay. Whenever you've always looked at the total spending, aggregate spending of all of your governments, put it together and compare it to the GDP, is less than 20%, which is very much below the norm, which shows you that if the government does its bit and stays out of the way of the people, the country will thrive. So that's what you need. You need to unwind all of these stupid controls that they put in place, all of these border closures, all of these things that they put around Naira, subsidy, all of those nonsense need to go so that we can then, you know, restore the enterprise of the average Nigerian and allow it to flourish and thrive. And if this government begins to move in that direction, you know, then for me that will be a good thing, good outcome. So we need to stop all of this myth around importation and consumption. We're not even importing anywhere near enough. We should be importing more, especially things that will enable us to create a productive base and to make sure that our people are not spending all their money on food rather than on, you know, on other things that will drive economic outcomes. You cannot have a nation where almost 90% of the people are spending 60% of their income on food. What else? The remaining 40% will go on what? Will go on accommodation and, you know, and possibly transportation. So they have no, you know, even forget the idea of saving money, which is important for driving investment. They can't even have disposable income on other things that will drive, that will create jobs, because you need consumption, you need effective consumption, people buying things, clothes, shoes, bags, what all those other things, consumer durables, that will create jobs for people. But if they don't have that, if everything that they have is being spent to just barely survive and eat, that's why there's poverty is endemic. That's why you have high inflation, high unemployment, because you're not creating any value. So we need to turn things around and make sure that these people start doing the right things. I see Dr. Aminu's hand up.
Oh, Dr. Aminu, did you want to respond to what Phoenix said? I'll give you 2 minutes.
I'm not responding to what Phoenix said. We can all agree to disagree there. But what I'm just want to talk about is these people, APC, spent 6 months. 6 months, you know, without devising a plan to open this border. If Tinubu has opened the border on May 29th, then maybe we can think about and say he really cares about people. You know how Phoenix cares about people. No, they don't really care about people. And what they are trying to do is they are toying with our lives and they are toying with the economy. And if we look at it, let's be honest, we keep talking about we are an import-dependent economy. Notwithstanding, I agree with Phoenix, we are not importing enough and we can import as much. But we have to look at how our foreign exchange is being pressured. And given that we are an import-dependent economy, what we should also be looking at is our foreign reserve. They are not managing the economy properly. They don't know what they are doing with the economy. And so opening this border, of course, if you look at rice, which I agree we should all import rice, you know, it's just number six in the on the imports list and is about combined with other things, you know, if we look at it, I think it's right in front of me, is about 3.8% of our imports. So lifting that, you know, some staple, you know, that will let the poor man breathe, that is fine. But there are things that they could have done within the 6 months or within the first 3 months of their business, you know. But they did not do it. And all they are just doing, you know, is they are just mentioning things as they go by. And doing things without proper thinking, without proper research, it's only going to end up in regrets. This is just my own worry. And honestly, I'm not being partisan here. Okay, let's say I am, but I'm not. Thank you. Let's go on.
Thank you, Dr. Aminu, for providing your own perspective. Hopefully, the listeners will reach their conclusions. But on to our final topic, which concerns Edo State. Edo State happens to be my home state. Asue Ighodalo, a lawyer from Edo State but based in Lagos, has declared his intention to run for governor under the People's Democratic Party, which is Aminu's party. Now, Dele, I gather you're also from Edo State, so the first question goes to you. Dele, is Asue throwing his hat in the ring? Is it a positive thing for Edo State in your view?
So Asue Ighodalo have been one of our very prominent Esan son, since 2007, 8, during the Oshiomhole time. He have been around in, just advising the government on what to do on economic policy and all of that. He's also the chairman of Alau Daro, summit. To be fair, Asue Ighodalo is a very, competent and a very industrious and, a variable, formidable person. But where the problem lies is Asue is not a politician. He's more like a technocrat, like Obaseki, right? So if you look at the atmosphere in Edo State right now, right, the PDP in Edo State is divided. You have the Danobe's legacy PDP, you have the Shaibu homeboy PDP, then you have the governor's PDP, right? And that's why Ighodalo is not on grassroots level. It's not a very popular person, right? You have to be like somebody who is deep into politics to really notice him. He's not as popular as Rice Man because him and Rice Man are from the same local government, right? Almost the same village. I think they are like 15 minutes away in Ewo Hirin.
I'm sorry,
So
which
that's
candidate do you call Rice Man for the benefit of the
that one, Dr. What's that name? Dr. Kenneth Imasuagbon, popularly known as Rice Man. So, but if you look at the pedigree of Dr. Asue Ighodalo, the pedigree, the capacity, he have it. But they say politics is local. Does he have that local followership? Or maybe if the governor back him, maybe there might be success. But election today is beyond the backing of the governor or sort of. The people are more, especially a state like Edo State, where most of the majority voter population are very in tune with what is going on in the country. You get me? So it will be easy to say Asue Ighodalo, but on that day, election, they say it's on your polling booth. Are they going to say, we don't really know who this man is? So that is just the only case. But Asue is a very competent and a very formidable guy.
Thank you, Dele. Let me come to Phoenix. Phoenix, the Labour Party, on the other hand, has Olumide Akpata, who might be squaring up with Asue. If you had to choose between those two, who would you prefer to be governor of Edo State, Phoenix? I know you're not from Edo, but if you were, who would you prefer?
Well, it's an interesting one for me. I mean, if I just look at the positions that both have taken, I'm looking between Akpata and Ighodalo, positions that they've taken in the political space in the last maybe 2 to 3 years, and things like that. For me, I would lean towards Akpata, looking at, his role as NBA president and some of the stance that he has taken. So I haven't seen much of Ighodalo in the political space. As far as I'm concerned, he's raised his hand, and I think that is great because I'm actually envious of Edo State that they have really sound characters who have reached the pinnacle or have done great in private life and now want to go into public life, which is interesting. I mean, the current governor was also of similar ilk, even though I don't think he's truly covered himself in glory. But yes, they are coming up with good candidates. But if I was to choose between them, I'd probably lean towards Akpata, simply because I mean, as far as I'm concerned, Ighodalo in this space is still very much of an unknown character, and I haven't seen him. And maybe because I haven't paid a lot of attention to him, but it also me it but for somebody who does pay attention to things like that, I haven't seen him take, certain positions on topical national issues, and which I've seen Akpata do. So Akpata would definitely be the one I would lean towards. But I'm still open. Again, as you said, I'm not from Edo State. I'm a neutral, and so for me, it allows us to compare and contrast, and maybe dig further into Ighodalo and see whether there's really something there that puts him ahead of the field.
Thank you, Phoenix. The follow-up question to that I was going to ask you is, there's already been a debate about the fact that he cannot speak his local Esa language. And apparently they said when he was addressing crowds in his hometown, he needed an interpreter to communicate his words. And for a number of people, they've said that should count against him. So what is your view, Phoenix? The fact that you don't speak an Edo language, should that disqualify an Edo indigent from becoming governor, in your view?
I don't think it should, and I think it brings to fore a one of the issues that I think we need to address. I'm very clear in my mind that the constitution we have currently is not fit for purpose, and we need to discuss, renegotiate, and create a constitution that will work for us. One of the things that needs to go away is this state of origin nonsense, and make it about where you've made your home, where you've paid your taxes, and things like that. Because if we start talking about inability to speak the language, I don't think it is that he can't speak entirely. I think if we're talking about lack of fluency or things like that, we're basically saying that nobody else apart from somebody who's native in the sense that you are from a heritage, an Edo State heritage. Why should a Yoruba man or an Igbo man or an Hausa man or an Efik man who is second or third generation born in Edo, why should they not be able to aspire to be Edo State governor? But we have those conversations about other parts of Nigeria, in Lagos, in things like that. So why would anybody be precluded simply because they're not able to speak the language fluently? I think, of course, they should be able to understand, and I believe I think he understands some of the language, but not entirely. That should not preclude him from becoming governor, in my view.
Thank you, Phoenix. Let me go to Dr. Aminu. Dr. Aminu, Asue Ighodalo is obviously vying to be the candidate of your party, the PDP. One of the interesting issues that has come up is the fact that, as you know, in Edo, there are three zones. You have the Edo South, Edo Central, and Edo North. And there's an informal rotational agreement. So the current governor is from Edo South. His predecessor, Oshiomhole, was from Edo North. And now there's a consensus that it should go to Edo Central, who are those are the Esa speaking people. Now, the issue a number of people have raised is that the PDP seems keen, prominent PDP supporters are keen to promote an Edo Central candidate because they believe it's their turn to produce the governor. But that same group of people at the federal level argue that the presidential ticket of the party should not be decided by zoning. Rather, the best man should win. So it shouldn't be about whether it was the turn of the Southeast or the South in general that no, the best man should win. So how does your party reconcile this, what appears to be a contradiction between its positions? On the one hand, they were ready to set aside zoning for Atiku, but in Edo State, they're fighting that it's the turn of Edo Central to produce the governor. So how do they reconcile this contradiction, Dr. Aminu?
Okay, I think these are two different things. Edo State currently is ruled by PDP. And as what do you call it, as an incumbent party, you have that power to rotate. However, PDP at the federal level, which they did not set it up for Atiku. Took it from the PDP governors, let's be honest, and Wike was one of those architects, that wanted everything to be opened up, not to the southeast. But when it was a game that was well played for between them, but the point I'm trying to make here is PDP at national level were actually planning to get into power. If PDP, this what happens in Edo State gives you, shows you a true picture of what PDP would have done if they, or what they will do when they are in power. They will rotate. They have been rotating, but the main culprits, that we want to look is APC. And if we are going to start counting of rotation, of who had actually had power in PDP, we will lose count there. But APC had finished from the north. They are the right people that should take it back to the south and zone it to the southeast, but we don't want to talk about them. We are absolving them as if they are not the party of Nigerians. They are supposed to be there. What did David Omahi do to them? What did Rochas Okorochas, my favorite, do to them? That they refused to give them that ticket. They are the people that are causing this bad blood in Nigeria. And we should not be looking at anywhere other than this group of people. PDP is not in power, is trying to get into power by all means, given the unconventional nature of this APC. As you can see, they went for a Muslim ticket, which is unconventional, untraditional in Nigeria's history, And they just wanted to get into power by all means. But PDP was only trying to a certain degree get into power, and they have already promised with this. It is in our constitution to rotate. It is in our constitution to rotate. These people, it is, it, I don't even, I haven't read their constitution. I don't want to. But when they were rotating, they know where it should be, but they refused. They blatantly refused. And this is what they are. And we have to come together and kick these people out of power. And Edo State, this is my warning to my good friend Bamidele. We have to be very careful with this group of people, APC. We until PDP and LP unite, this PDP will use all sorts of people. APC will use all sorts of maneuvers to take away that incumbency that we have in Edo State. So we have to be careful. They are the bad blood, of Nigeria, APC. They are the cancer of Nigeria. So for me to explain, these are two different things. What APC, PDP was trying to get into power at the federal level. And if they had gotten into power, then it will be a different game. And we have that credibility of rotation, no doubt about it. But when you are not in power, you have to find, the first objective is for you to get into power. Find a way to get into power. Appeal to the electorate. How will you appeal to the electorate and get massive number of votes from the electorate? And we saw the attempt that PDP did. If not because the opposition was divided, PDP would have been in power. But that is another story that we will talk about when all nerves have calmed down. But the main cancer that we have to fight and purge out is APC. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Aminu. I'm sure the listeners will reach their views on whether or not they think zoning should apply at the federal and state level. But the final question, I was going to ask all three of you because there's been a lot of debate within Edo State, the Edo Twitter community, because as soon as it was announced that Asue Ighodalo was the chosen one, anointed by Governor Obaseki, there was a joke going around that why doesn't Edo State seem to produce handsome governors? But I just want to check with you, Phoenix, because I've looked at Asue's photo. He's a handsome man, isn't he, Phoenix?
Michael, I will not be drawn into having such conversations. Let the Edo people, particularly female Edo voters, decide. Maybe so. I will not be drawn into discussing whether one man is handsome or not.
No, because what I saw his pictures, and I thought, oh, this is a good looking man, but the commentary in Edo State seems to be, why do we seem to produce, as they call them, Wawa. Why does Edo produce Wawa governors? So maybe Dele can help. Dele, what is your view? Asue is handsome, is he not, Dele?
I mean, you see, handsome, they say, is in the eyes of the beholder. Like I said, in the whole of Nigeria, Edo men are the most beautiful men you will come across. So I don't know what they are talking about, you know. But yeah, as well, Udalus, I mean, black people like us, we are winning, you know. So yeah, absolutely, he's a good looking man now. Absolutely.
Well, thank you, Dele. Dr. Aminu, is your hand up or is somebody else's hand up?
No, it's not. But I think he can still he's more beautiful than Oshiomhole. So if we are going to do a beauty contest there, he's going to beat quite a lot of people. Their past governors, including Obaseki himself. No disrespect, he's still my leader. But yeah.
Okay, well, as Felix says, the voters of Edo State will decide. But on that note, our time is up. So first of all, I must thank our guests. Thank you, Dele, and thank you, Dr. Aminu, for taking time out of your busy schedules to be here. Thank you, Felix, for co-hosting. And last but not least, I say thank you to our listeners for always giving us helpful feedback and for remaining loyal. So until same time next week, I say have a fantastic 7 days to everyone.
Thanks, Michael. Thank you, listeners. And thanks, Dele and Aminu, for joining us this week. Have a great week, everyone.
Thank you for having me.